Hello, podcast listener. You're listening to a Halford and Brough podcast, and I'm using my podcast voice. You can listen to us on Google, Apple, Spotify. It's the Halford and Brough podcast, and thank you for listening.
On a Friday. Happy Friday, everybody. Halford Brough. Scratch that. Halford Thomas Drance. Brough should be returning next week, but we have a busy Friday show ahead of us here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. James Sharman is going to be joining us momentarily here. A couple pieces of business to get to before we do that. Halford and Brough in the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. Three dealerships to serve you better. North Shore Acura, Acura of Langley, and Briard Acura on Terminal Avenue. This is also the 7 o'clock hour of the show. The 7 o'clock hour is brought to you by North Star Metal Recycling. Vancouver's premier metal recycler pays the highest prices on scrap metal. Ooh, scrap metal. North Star Metal Recycling, they recycle, you get paid on 1170 Powell Street in Vancouver. Okay, that business is taken care of. Hour one is in the books. Download the podcast. Apple, Google, Spotify. Guys, what do we do to the subscribe button?
Smash it.
That's right.
Ring the bell.
Let's go to the phone lines now. Sportsnet, DAZN soccer analyst, excited to have him on the program today. James Sharman now on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Good morning, James. How are you?
Good morning, fellas. Doing great, thanks.
We've been looking forward to this hit all morning. It feels like every time Canada plays now, something not necessarily unprecedented, but something that hasn't happened in a long time finally happens. And now it is getting a result at Cedro Pansula in Honduras, as I try and choke that one out. 2-0 victory, first time that they've won in Honduras since 1985. You get to sit back and watch this. I imagine you remember 10 years ago when it was the House of Horrors in Honduras. What a time. Well, look how far this team has come. This program has come. A very impressive result in Honduras yesterday.
Yeah, you know, I've tried to remove 2012 from my consciousness, which hasn't been too easy. The 8-1, of course, but just to see how far this team's come since then, in particular in the last couple of years, it's just incredible, isn't it? Really, I mean, what a different beast it is entirely. We have players playing in the biggest leagues around the world, starring in the biggest leagues around the world, superstars playing for European champions, players on the cusp of massive money moves to really big clubs. It's come a long way. It's this golden generation. I think it's fair enough to say at this point, it's a golden generation. And to now see this team go on the road in CONCACAF into Honduras, which has, they haven't got a track record of any kind of success there, and to play pretty well and to go toe-to-toe with a team that plays a certain style of physical, intimidating soccer, just shows how this team can change its systems and its style and its mentality. So all is very good right now. It seems every time I talk about this team, it's about a big game coming up and a huge moment. And, well, they keep providing it for us, and it's just been some great theater, if nothing else.
Just to give the listeners a sense of how far things were behind 10 years ago, I'll apologize for not knowing in the moment. Where were you working in 2012 when they had this opportunity to advance to the Hex? They went down to Honduras. I remember the hype being extremely high. I remember a lot of the players talking up their chances. And then to get humiliated 8-1. What do you remember about covering the team, the program at that time, and how devastating that was and how low a point that was?
Yeah, you know, it was really frustrating because they'd actually put together a pretty good qualifying campaign under Stephen Hart. They played some good football, got some good results, and they had to go to Honduras and get a draw. That was it, a draw, and into the Hex, which they hadn't been in for many, many, many years. And that's an opportunity to qualify for the World Cup. So you go down there, you know what's going to be done, play it safe, and then to be crushed 8-1, it was embarrassing. And, you know, there's only three players on the current squad from that day, and, you know, they all say the same thing. You know, it's one of those weird events that happens in football sometimes, but the team quit on itself. And I remember at halftime, the halftime interviews, and the captain just basically he'd given up. It was, I think, 4-0 at that point, maybe 4-1. He was shell-shocked, and it was extremely frustrating because we knew where the game had to go in this country. And to get to that next step, it was to qualify for a Hex and potentially a World Cup, and to see this complete capitulation. And you knew that the naysayers would laugh about it, and there's a lot of soccer haters for some reason in Canada. Fewer now, I think, than there were back then. But they are looking for an excuse to make fun of this team, and we knew, anyone who worked in the soccer industry knew that man, that's going to be a tough few weeks, months, and it turns out years, because I think we're still, you know, putting Band-Aids over the wounds from that night.
One of the players involved in that 2012 debacle in Honduras was none other than the goalkeeper, Milian Borjan, who, and we'll get to the Jonathan David world-class performance yesterday, I felt like that save in the 70th minute was of the world-class variety, not only because of the athleticism and the reactions, but also the moment and the timing of the match. Honduras was pushing. There was a 10-15-minute window there where they were fighting for their lives and looked like they had found and exposed a few things in the back line. For him to come up with that save in that moment, given his history there, I thought it was profound. I thought it was world-class.
Oh, it was world-class. There's no doubt. If his name was Donnarumma or Alisson, that thing's getting highlight reels around the world in all sorts of, you know, soccer markets. It was that good. And as he mentioned, it's a good observation. At the time, Canada was very much on the back foot. Honduras are going at them, and Canada wasn't looking great. They were giving up possession. Honduras are keeping possession. Not too many great chances, but they got that moment. And at 1-0, it could have been 1-1 quite easily, and that's a different beast entirely. So to make that save, diving across to his left, I don't know how he got the spring and the stretch. He was just brilliant. You know, he's been great in this whole qualifying campaign. He's a very good goalkeeper, plays for Red Star Belgrade, which is, you know, a team that is involved in some of the most vociferous and hostile environments in world football. So he can handle the pressure. But he's shown himself to be a very good goalkeeper as well now, and has that ability to make that game-saving save, which not everyone has. So I thought it was a huge moment, and then obviously, you know, it kind of inspired the troops. And then within 3 minutes, they're up 2-0.
We're speaking to James Sharman, soccer analyst for DAZN and Sportsnet here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Again, we've kind of buried the lead. It's been a theme today, but we've buried the lead a little bit. The third question talks about maybe the greatest moment from last night, and that's the Jonathan David golazo. As you see that unfold, my biggest takeaway was that is a world-class piece of skill, not just from David, but from the ball out of the back. And I even give Adekube a ton of credit for being calm under pressure and playing a simple ball to the center back so he can sling that over the top. But those are the moments that we just haven't really historically seen from a Canadian team who can do those things at the highest level at the most pressure-packed moments. I think that's the thing. It was the combination of all three that makes you think, gee, where, like, the sky might actually be the limit for this team given how well they can play in these big moments.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, listen, that was a moment in the game where they're being pressed deep in the match, and they could have crumbled. They could have wilted, for sure, especially in that environment. But they relied at that point on their skill set. And you're right, the calmness of Adekube to find Liam Fraser, who put that beautiful ball over the top to Jonathan David. I mean, Liam Fraser came on in the first half after Sam Payet got injured. Looked a bit shaky at times, but really settled down. He's a young player. He's been at very big clubs, well, TFC in particular in MLS, but just moved to Belgium and playing, you know, some good mm-hmm. football there, playing regularly, and, you know, but not a well-known player in this squad at all. So to put that ball across through the middle for John David, who, man, that was some sublime class. That's why this guy's going to move to an Arsenal or a Liverpool for, you know, 40 to 50 million probably. You know, he's that good. The composure of his head, chest, one bounce and then to finish. It was brilliant. And I don't know if it's better than Alphonso Davies's goal against Panama, but it's certainly up there. It's very, very close. And again, another moment, another iconic moment that this whole qualifying campaign's producing for our soccer fans and sports fans, you know, beyond that. So, yeah, what a goal. And you just felt the pressure come off the shoulders of the Canadian team at that point, because at 1-0, you know, they're being pushed deep. There's chances that the goalkeeper's been forced into some huge saves, and then to just get that moment of brilliance and to go ahead 2-0 just shows what this team can do.
We talked about depth of squad being another thing that previous iterations of the Canadian national team didn't necessarily have, at least not like this. To not have Alphonso Davies, to not have Steven Eustachio, and to still put forth that performance is terrific. And it's important because this window, easily the most grueling of them all. It's very short periods of time, a lot of travel, Central America to Canada, then back to Central America. You need depth of squad. So with that said, this Sunday match against the U.S. in Hamilton, what do you anticipate in terms of deployment and lineups? How will it differ from what we saw in Honduras? And does Canada maybe look at this game and not necessarily punt, but say, okay, we can beat the two Central American teams that are bottom of the table in Honduras and El Salvador. Maybe this game against the U.S. is where we give some other players an opportunity to play, and then we focus on getting 6 points. And I know it's crazy to say, but getting 6 points on the road in Central America.
Yeah, no, it's a good point. It's interesting because in El Salvador are actually a pretty good team, despite where they are in the rankings.
Yep.
They played the States to a pretty tight 1-0 yesterday. They tied them 0-0 before, and I know Canada beat them 3-0 earlier in the campaign, but they're not as bad as people think they are. So it won't be an easy 3 points in El Salvador, for sure. But I think what happened with the Honduras win, given with Panama losing to Costa Rica, there is that breathing space now for Canada.
Sure.
They can now lose a game, even maybe two games. I don't think they will lose two games, but they could potentially and still be okay the way the standings are. So there'll be less pressure, I think, on them in this U.S. game because of the result against Honduras. But this is a team that wants to win each game, you know, and that's been the mindset from day one. You know, it's not a team that's prepared to go and say, well, we'll accept a draw on this one. They want to win every game, and they want to show the CONCACAF Giants, and they've shown them already that we can play with you and we can actually beat you as well. So I still see an aggressive side coming out on Sunday, but like you mentioned there, it's a tough window, right? You know, 3 games in 7 days. The MLS players are rusty. They haven't played since late last year, of course. So he's really relying on his European stars. So looking at the starting 11 from yesterday, there will be changes. So I wonder about Steven Vitoria. He doesn't generally play back-to-back games, especially one being on turf. But he's been great so far. So I'm sure if he can play, he will. Stefan Eustachy, you mentioned, is really interesting because he's out with COVID protocols, but it's very murky as far as, you know, exactly where he's at with that, with the symptoms. Is he just in quarantine? The CSA is keeping their cards close to their chests. I've got a suspicion he'll be back for this game. And also alongside Mark Anthony Kay,
right.
He wasn't playing last time out either. So they've got options. And you mentioned depth, and that's so important, right? Even without Davis, without Eustachio, they've got, you know, two players at every position, it seems, who will do a job. And they've succeeded and won games in this qualifying campaign without the biggest names at times. So I think it bodes really well for what should be a great match on Sunday. It could be a tight affair. You know, the States are going through the same kind of process as Canada, transitioning. They're also a team that's doing pretty well on the table right now. They'll be, you know, less pressure on them as well. So I think expect a pretty entertaining match.
Now, the depth of squad thing, oftentimes that's a conversation that leads to management, deployment, what the gaffer is going to do with regards to a starting 11 and then who the substitutes will be. I think we need to spend a moment to talk about what John Herdman has done with this program and how he's seemingly managed to hit almost every right note. That's reflected by the fact that, you know, haven't lost a single game in qualifying yet. How much credit does Herdman deserve for this? I know he often deflects and says this is about the players and this is about them rallying and representing their country and having a common goal, but it seems as though everything he does, from the littlest detail, like bringing chefs down to Honduras and making sure that the travel is top-notch, to the bigger picture, higher-level stuff like substitutions and formations and deployment, it really seems like he's hitting all the right notes right now.
It does, you know, we can talk tactics, and he's very, very good tactically. He's got, you know, so many game plans within a game. You know, we trying to pick out his first 11, you can't do it, right, because it changes as per the opponent. It's impossible, and what formation he uses. So from that standpoint, he's very modern, very progressive. But to me, the biggest thing is just he's got that, the identity and the culture he's nurtured there. When he first got aboard, the culture, it was a broken culture. There were cliques there. There were the European players, the MLS players, you know, the South American-based players as well. There are real bad divisions in that squad. And speaking of some of the players, you know, when he first got hired, they're a bit concerned about, well, who's this guy coming from women's soccer? How can he be coaching men? That was the attitude. And they'll say to a man that it took about one session, one training session, and they bought in 100%. He really is that motivator. And he's developed this culture, this brotherhood culture, which is what all the players refer to all the time. They love each other. They're popular. They'll die in the field for each other, and they've got the identity now. We know who Canada is. Now, listen, let's not kid ourselves. The timing's beautiful for John Herdman.
Yep.
Just as he comes in charge, Alfonso Davis is emerging. John David, Carl Aaron refines himself, right? So he's timed it really, really well, which he says was accidental. You know, I'm not sure I believe that. I think he's a pretty smart guy. It's all kind of this perfect storm right now, and we're seeing the benefits of that at the moment. So I think John Herdman should get the majority of the credit right now for just reinventing how the Canadian soccer system sees itself.
The Canadians are back in action. No rest for the weary. It is going to be Sunday at Hamilton against the United States. Noon kickoff our time. It should be another entertaining affair, given what Canada's put forth already. Hey, James, thanks a lot for doing this today. We really appreciate it. Enjoy the game on the weekend. Let's do this again soon.
Absolutely. Anytime, guys. Thank you.
Thank you. James Sharman from DAZN and Sportsnet here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Friendly reminder that all Canadian soccer talk on Sportsnet 650 is brought to you by CertainTeed, the pro's choice for roofing, siding, drywall, insulation, and ceiling systems. Ooh, ceiling systems. CertainTeed Pro all the way. And I got a little bit of time here, Drancer. Do you want to do some Ask Us Anythings?
Or I think we should put I think we should put out the great debate. Okay. To the listeners and find out, like, Sunday,
yeah,
noon,
yes,
it's the Yanks versus the Canadians.
Oh, I see where you're going.
At the Ice Cap in Hamilton, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then at 12:30, in a game of American football.
Yes,
it is
the second football.
It is the best quarterback in the NFL versus Patrick Mahomes. In Bengals versus Chiefs. So
hold on, you're a Bengals fan?
I'm a Joe Burrow fan, okay. To be clear.
That was just a clever play.
Yeah.
Just a clever play.
I'll be honest, I'm a big LSU guy, so I know that the Chiefs are gonna beat the Bengals.
Can you do that in a Louisiana accent?
No,
like,
I can't.
Like Brian Kelly. Come on.
My family.
Yeah. Go Tigers. I'm a big LSU guy. So the thing I'm, like, taking solace in is, like, at least Clyde Edwards-Hilaire gets nice things.
Yes, that's true. Okay, so the question is, what is primary viewing and what is secondary viewing?
Correct.
On Sunday, because both games are at noon? Are you a Canada-U.S.
Yes.
person, or are you an AFC championship between the Bengals? And
as
the
you're
Chiefs
debating
person?
It with your buddies, like, which gets laptop, which gets TV, how are you going to track the two games? I'm curious, because we're having that debate among me and my homies.
One, everyone needs to get on my level and have two televisions set up in the living room.
That is a good level to be at.
Do you have two full TVs? Or are you just saying, like,
no, I cut
have
one
a
in
second
half. I cut
screen.
One in half.
No. Hold on. I'm saying, are you calling, like, a laptop screen your second television?
No.
In air quotes.
No,
or do you actually have two TVs?
I tweet this out all the time. I have two televisions.
I don't follow your tweet.
I have one placed above the fireplace on the mantle, so high level screening. And that's about 35 inches. I don't want to brag.
So that's the B screen.
That would be the B screen, yeah.
Yeah.
And then the A screen is the larger of the two.
The 80-incher, yeah.
But it's two televisions because I feel like everyone needs to be able to watch. I feel like a laptop viewing is a max two-person affair.
Because max two-person. It's like, you can track something with like a more intimate group within the larger group on a laptop.
Yeah. So, for me, all due respect to Joe Burrow and the second best quarterback in the NFL, Patrick Mahomes, I'm going Canada, U.S., big screen, primary viewing.
I can't do it. I have to watch the football first.
I mean...
Yeah.
Where's your national pride, man?
Well, I have lots of national pride for Joe Burrow. Honorary Canadian.
Okay.
Can I quiz you guys?
He would torch the CFL.
You can quiz us.
Can I quiz you for an Ask Us Anything?
Yes.
Do you know what Canada's odds of qualifying for the World Cup?
Oh, you just asked me this.
Oh, 98%. That's my guess.
The percentages is, I think it was 89, wasn't it?
No, it's way higher than that.
Is 99.5%.
Oh, wow. Way higher than that. Yeah.
Well, I saw it was like 95% going into last night's game.
Right.
They were a very good chance, and then with the Panama loss compounding the Canucks or the Canadian victory,
well, they are Canucks.
They are Canucks.
I follow up on his Ask Us Anything to ask you guys something.
Yeah. Go.
If they do in fact qualify, are you seriously looking at a way to go to Qatar to watch Canada?
I've already
Canada?
Looked at flight prices to Doha. Yeah,
that's
yeah.
fine. But are you seriously considering it?
Yes.
Like, there's a difference between I wonder how much it costs, and like, I need to figure this out.
Yes.
When is it?
December.
December?
Yeah.
It's a Winter World Cup because of the heat.
Oh, I don't know if you're 0% chance.
Because of hockey, yeah.
Yeah, there's a 100% chance that I'm
Oh, really?
Okay. I mean,
it's such a disappointment that it's in Qatar, though. If it was like a summer tournament in France, 1,000%.
I also realized that there are zero hotels available in Qatar right now. I was reading an article from the BBC yesterday, and they've spotlighted this numerous times. It's like, just so everybody knows, because more teams have booked qualification. For example, Iran qualified yesterday, I want to say. One of the first teams outside of Europe to do it. So they're saying, like, hey, all these countries that have qualified, people are booking now. And they're going to various travel sites. And like, there's no lodgings available whatsoever. That's going to be a problem because there's so many other countries that still need to qualify. And presumably fans are going to book their tickets.
Is there a Doha version of Airbnb?
I don't know. Like, I don't know.
You know? I mean, I don't either. Can you stay in Abu Dhabi and fly in for the day?
A lot of people are doing that.
Yeah, like staying
I'm sure you could do that.
Yeah. I mean,
I think... A lot of people are... Or well, they're forced to do it,
you
really.
You stay in Dubai or Abu Dhabi and you fly in for the day. I think that's probably your best option. But then you're just upping your costs even further.
Well, when you live in that part of the world, I'm sure you could just rent a private jet.
Right.
Land your helicopter right on the pitch.
Well, and as could Halford, right?
Yes, of course.
Get on my level.
With that good drive time money.
Two TVs and your own private chopper.
Well, two halves of one TV.
Sparky wants to know, ask us anything. Can Halford say Pedro Sam Sula again? That was bad.
Pedro Sam Pula?
I can't even remember how I said it. It's San Pedro Sula. I think I mangled every single word and every single consonant and vowel. It just made no sense. I apologize to our thriving Honduran listenership. San Pedro Sula. Thank you, Sparky. Here's one. Matt in Abbey. This is an Ask Drancer Anything. This is a Would You Drather, too. Would Drancer Drather own a boat or an older RV? So not a current...
Not like
mega
a
RV.
Stud RV, yeah.
Yeah,
like,
but it also has the uniqueness and charm of being a dated RV.
A dated RV.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing is, like, I'd rather own a boat, but a boat is a far more costly investment, right?
Just throw your money into it.
Yeah.
And
I'd rather
it sinks to the bottom of whatever body of water you're
I'd
on.
Rather sell the older RV to, like, one of those Instagram couples that likes to post photos of, you know, like, the girlfriend leading the man around the world.
Yep.
And then I would put that money into a boat club so that I don't have to do any of the servicing but have access to a boat as much as I want.
I love that that's Drance's idea of Instagram influencers.
That's what they are.
The follow me picture.
Yeah, the follow me picture was big, like, 5 years ago. I mean, whatever. I was just using a dated reference. I definitely follow the van people and then also the van people murders.
Yeah.
Follow those stories too.
Hard turn for the van people. Seriously.
Really tough. But yeah, I mean, you know, I don't actually follow a couple of granola accounts, but my wife does sort of keep me updated. But yeah, I'd pour the money into a boat club. So
that of mine joined a boat club.
Dude, boat clubs are amazing.
Yeah. So for those that are unaware, it's all the luxuries and amenities of owning a boat without actually owning a boat.
Yeah,
someone else does all the ownership.
It's like a subscription service.
It's a subscription service to a boat. And I mean, that's what I want. Like, I love to be out on the water on a nice day, but I have no desire to deal with all the issues of transport and mortgage and maintenance.
Scraping barnacles off your dinghy.
Well,
yeah, no, I know.
And don't forget too, like, do not, like, a boat is, you know, you might as well just put a hole in every single pocket you have, right? Like, it's such a money pit.
Hole in the boat.
And if you're asking Taylor Hall,
sink it.
If you're asking Taylor Hall, that license quiz.
Yes, oof, it's not easy getting your boater's license. Okay, we gotta go.
The open book quiz.
Dom is in my ear because Dan Milstein is joining us next.
Yes.
You'll recognize the name. Very prominent NHL agent, represents, among others, Evander Kane, who, in case you haven't heard it, is in the news recently, signed with the Edmonton Oilers, did a big media splash yesterday to address the multitude of headlines involving him and his personal life. We will talk to the agent, Dan Milstein, next on the Halford and Bruff Show, featuring Thomas Drance on Sportsnet 650. It's Cedro Pansula Cedro Pansula. 7:31 on a Friday, Halford Bruff, Sportsnet 650. Slight alteration, Halford Drance, Sportsnet 650. Thomas Drance with us today, Sportsnet 650's very own, The Athletic Vancouver's very own. This show, this hour, all the good stuff you're about to hear, two fine companies bringing it to you. The first, the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. The second, North Star Metal Recycling. Vancouver's premier metal recycler pays the highest prices on scrap metal. North Star Metal Recycling. They recycle. You get paid. Visit them at 1170 Powell Street in Vancouver. Okay. Joining us on the line next, very happy to have him on the program, player agent Dan Milstein, now on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Good morning, Dan. How are you?
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for coming on. We appreciate you taking the time. We want to start with one of your more recent additions as a client, Evander Kane. Yesterday, a very busy day for Evander. The NHL announces that its investigation wraps up. He signs a deal with the Edmonton Oilers, and then his interview with TSN's Kayla Gray goes to broadcast. I imagine from your perspective, Dan, this was a very eventful day. Can you walk us through the process of having a client that has that much stuff going on in one 24-hour window?
Well, obviously, a lot was preparation in advance of tomorrow. So over the last 3 weeks or so, we had an opportunity to interview multiple clubs. We have had numerous conversations. Evander, actually, in Vancouver, had a dinner with Ken Holland and Dave Tippett last Monday. And so we've been preparing for this. Obviously, there have been numerous discussions. Evander and I have been on the phone really since early November, at least 4 to 10 times every single day as we were working out different things and different issues. And so I'm very glad and very, very happy for him. To be honest with you, yesterday, once it was all said and done, I just went for a 2-hour walk. And the feeling, the last time I felt as good and satisfied for my job is when Nikita Kucherov and Andrei Vasilevsky won the Stanley Cup. It was a very similar feeling. And so I've enjoyed for 5 minutes, and then I picked up my phone and was doing business for other clients.
Dan, what was your reaction to the NHL investigation wrapping up the way it did, and will it have any impact on the grievance that's been filed in regards to the termination of his contract in San Jose?
So, unfortunately, I cannot comment on the grievance part, but as far as the investigation itself, we were expecting not to have any discipline as it's related to some of the issues that you're aware of, but unfortunately, at the moment, I cannot discuss anything else.
There was a lot of reaction from fans, from Edmonton's fans specifically, when the club signed Evander Kane, some questioning whether that they could bring the off-ice baggage to the team, despite the fact that it's a terrific on-ice product. There is a long and documented history of issues with his marriage and relationship, with gambling, everything that's very well documented. From your perspective, was there ever an issue about bringing someone on with that history as a client?
You know, certainly prior to taking the vendor as a client, I've done the due diligence. I've spoken to some of my clients and then guys that he's played with. And I felt, and I'm sure that the vendor prior to contacting me has done homework on myself and Gold Star Sports Management Group as well. And and basically we've had numerous conversations, and Evander is actually a good guy, and I'm glad that he's part of our team. And things are good. As far as some of the issues, look, everybody deserves a second chance. Everyone has some kind of issues. And so my job as a sports agent, as a someone who helps the athletes, is to help help him and some of my other clients to take their professional careers and personal lives to the next level. And so I am glad that I was that I'm part of Evander's team, and I look forward to working with him for many years.
Did the conversation ever come up that this might be his last chance, so he needs to approach this differently than he has in the past?
We've had numerous conversations that I would rather not discuss. But no, I mean, he's an extremely talented athlete, and some of the things, the perception in the media, unfortunately. You know, if you're a good guy and off ice and a good player, you're not going to, you know, media isn't going to write anything, right? So it's always everybody's looking for drama, and things sometimes are over exaggerated, and what I've read versus the reality are two different things.
Dan, seems like about a third of the league at least kicked the tires or engaged with you in the process that ultimately results in Kane signing in Edmonton yesterday. What was decisive in shaping Kane's decision to ultimately choose to join the Oilers?
So we have had numerous Zoom calls with teams, head coaches, and general managers, and from the get go. And I told the vendor before we got on the phone, I don't believe that he's ever met. I know for a fact he's never met Ken Holland and or the head coach. But Kenny and I have had a long relationship going back to early 2000s in Detroit, and so I am. Ken is a great person, a phenomenal general manager, and so some of the things that we've discussed. But one of the major reasons why Evander selected Edmonton is obviously Ken Holland and his what he has done for hockey for many years. And of course, anytime you have a chance to play with the captain, and you have to seriously consider. We have had some other teams. Similar with similar setups, but you know, all the signs were pointing towards Edmonton from the very first conversation we had the day Evander's contract with San Jose was terminated.
We're here with Dan Milstein from Gold Star Hockey. He's the player agent for Evander Kane and also for recent Vancouver draft pick Danila Klimovic. Dan, Danila's been at the American League level for the Vancouver Canucks, which is a pretty high level for an 18-year-old who was playing in Belarus prior to this season. What's the experience been like overall? And in particular, it does seem like, you know, some of the ice time, some of the production has been down of late. What have the conversations with the organization been like and with Danila as he goes through, you know, the development curve of learning North American pro hockey for the first time at his age?
Well, we knew prior to the draft that he was worthy of being selected in the first round. But being that he was from Belarus, really the only, and due to the COVID situation last season, scouts were unable to go and see him. So he really had only one tournament where everyone got an opportunity to see him, and it was at the U18s Worlds in Dallas. And I believe the game was so he had a hat trick against in the first game, and then the second night the USA was playing against Finland at the big rink, and Belarus was playing versus Latvia, or I believe. And so it was interesting to see all the scouts, the general managers from the NHL clubs have cleared the USA Finland game at a nice big arena, and everybody was. It was the small arena was overcrowded because everyone was there just to watch Danila Klimovic. So we towards the end we knew that that he was going to be selected sometime in the middle of second round, and he was fortunate that Vancouver drafted him. As soon as his name was called up, within minutes the general manager Jim Benning at the time had reached out to me and wanted to talk about contracts. So technically before. My other client, Nikita Chibrikov, was called at 50. Danila Klimovic, who was selected at 41st, had a tentative agreement to have an entry-level contract discussed and signed in the coming days.
Dan, you know, a lot of people probably don't realize this the way that, you know, reporters, people a little closer to the business would, but you represent a lot of Russian clients, and one thing you're famous for is the level of service that you provide in terms of making sure guys are settled, comfortable as they adjust to life in North America. How much of your time is spent on that? How do you provide that level of service? And can you give fans some insight into why it's crucial to help make sure your clients, you know, make the transition as seamlessly as possible?
Well, I mean, Russian or not, I mean, my business is based on referrals, and I am a banker by trade. I was ranked number one loan officer in the United States out of 550,000 people years prior to also becoming the agent. And the Golser family of companies, we have multiple companies, but everything I do is based on be always available. I haven't called in sick since 1998. you know, one of my principles, I put myself in a customer's shoes and I walk in them. And so whether you're a Russian, Belarusian, American, Ukrainian, Canadian, bottom line is that everybody, there's, you know, many years ago, I was negotiating a contract with Lou Lamorella. And Lou, actually, I've learned one thing from him. I've learned many things from him. But one of the things he asked me was like, Dan, what is it that one thing that everybody wants and needs? And how can you sum it up all in one word? And that word is feelings. You know, you have to treat others the way you want to be treated. And if you, so anything I do, I always think about that one word, feelings. And so I haven't called in sick since 1998, dead or alive. I always work. I always answer the phone. I have gotten many clients, including Nikita Kucherov, just because I answer the phone and what I do, because guys see what we do. Obviously, I have a big team. I have many assistants that handle all of the aspects. I have sometimes we find out that the wives are pregnant before even the guys do. You know, in one particular case, the wife of a player wanted to surprise him for Valentine's Day, and she made a big, nice album. A story of their love with pictures, and the very last one was the ultrasound of a baby. But she reached out to us 2 weeks prior to that because she needed the doctors arranged, and she would get some questions about the insurance and things of that nature. And same thing with the vendor. I mean, like literally every day, 4 to 10 phone calls, and that's what we do. Anything we need, like earlier before I got on the phone with you guys, I was arranging for a booster shot and for family COVID shots for another high-profile player of ours. And so whether it's that, whether it's the doctors, whether it's moving your stuff, arranging for, you know, a new house, anything you need, we handled all we want for our young players and our pro players. Just concentrate on playing the game and be a good family person. And we handle everything else for you, including, you know, flowers to you, to your spouse, to your parents. We do it all.
Dan, you bring up booster shots, but one thing that was interesting prior to the season, right, was because the Russian vaccine still required you to quarantine in the event you came to Canada, right? You had some players, Klimovich included, that sort of flew out to a country offering them, I think it was Bulgaria, something like that, where they were able to get the Johnson & Johnson one shot so that they could avoid the quarantine protocols on entry into Canada. And the story that I heard was that additional teams, having understood that, sort of followed suit to some extent. How difficult was it navigating some of those waters over the course of the summer?
Well, you know, I and Gold Star Hockey, we were basically the reference book for most teams. We have received numerous calls and we've advised a number of NHL clubs on how to navigate. You know, certainly, you know, we have one of the largest teams in Europe as far as, you know, the staff. And so we besides the NHL players, just 20% of the CHL import draft belongs to Gold Star last year. So we have had a lot of guys that my assistants in Europe were basically either flying with them and or meeting at the airport, putting them in the car, driving them to the facility, getting the booster shot or getting the shot, and then taking them to the hotel for 24 hours so that they could get through their whatever symptoms they might have and flying back. So we have, but we've helped not only our clients, but we've helped numerous teams. As a matter of fact, even a few days ago, one of the Canadian clubs reached out because they're trying to do the same thing for others. So this past year was very difficult, and not only this wasn't about quarantine. There for a while, foreigners could not arrive to Canada without having a vaccination done. So in some cases, I couldn't have even brought the guy and put him for 14 days in the hotel. So we've been, you know, my staff, and I'm very fortunate and thankful to have such great people working for me. It was extremely stressful times, but in the end, everybody got their shots, got their visas, and got into the U.S. and or Canada long before their camps.
Dan, new Canucks general manager Patrick Alvin spent a lot of time, in fact, kept bringing the conversation back to European free agents when he was introduced as the club's new general manager this week. One of those guys, Andrei Kuzmenko, you represent, he's thought to be the top European free agent in hockey this year. You heard from Vancouver?
Well, Patrick and I, so it's Jim Rutherford and I, have had numerous conversations. You know, we have the most unrestricted or undrafted players out of Europe, especially out of Russia. So chances are, if there is a free agent out of Russia, he is represented by Gold Star. And so so Patrick and I, same as Jim Rutherford, have had numerous conversations over the years about different players.
Dan, we want to thank you for taking the time to do this today. We really appreciate it. Best of luck with everything moving forward this season. Let's do this again later on down the road.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. Dan Milstein, NHL player agent here on the Halford and Brough Show featuring Thomas Drant on Sportsnet 650. A lot to unpack there, to say the least. Quite a character, Dan Milstein. And I understand that some people have no time for the unemptieth chance that Evander Kane has been granted. I'll say this. The reason I asked the question, if the past issues, headlines, behavioral patterns ever gave Dan Milstein pause to bring him on as a client, because I genuinely wanted to know if there is a bar or a threshold that gets crossed there. And the answer was no. I mean, it was as cut and dry as you can get. He had his own interpretations and his own set of ideas and values and what the agency represented and what kind of clients they were willing to take on, which is why we asked the question. We also asked the question if the conversation ever came up about this is your last chance. And that was a question sent in by one of our listeners. If that was a conversation that agent and client had, Dan decided to punt on that. That's the conversation. That's the agent side of things. That's the representation side of things.
You're an advocate. Right? You're an advocate. And, you know, you have to, if you want to be successful as an agent, you have to be willing to be a shark, right? And that's the job. I mean, it's why agents always have a bit of a complicated relationship, right? Mm-hmm. With the industry, a complicated reputation. And, yeah. And you know, you'd see it from basically any agent that's ever been hired in a management role, and we're seeing that accelerate in NHL circles, including in Vancouver with Emily Castonguay being named an assistant general manager here. Mm-hmm. You know, there's always, when you're advocating for individuals within a team environment, right? Mm-hmm. Your incentives and your goals are sometimes going to be at odds with, you know, with the sort of wider hockey world.
Not a huge difference between the agent client relationship and the lawyer
client relationship. not a huge difference. Yeah. And that you know, an awful lot of agents are in fact lawyers, as Mike Gillis was, as Emily Castonguay is.
Right. So I mean, at the end of the day, if you remove whatever sort of morality clauses you may have internally and it's just about doing your job and performing, that's kind of why we put the questions out there. It's like, this is the game as Dan Milstein plays it. Right. Mm-hmm. I understand. And don't get me wrong. If I was the general manager of a National Hockey League team, I'm not bringing Evander Kane in. Not even entertaining the idea, to be perfectly honest. And Jason, I've had that conversation numerous times. And that is because of how I feel about the situation, his past. I was also a firm believer that people don't change, that people are what they are, and that past behavior is a pretty good indicator of what the future is going to bring.
I agree with you 100%. I think the Oilers are taking a massive, massive risk, but it's a massive risk that teams were lining up to take. I mean, you can't ignore the fact that for $750,000, they've just landed a pretty unique physical presence who scores at a first line rate, right? And, you know, with all of the noise and all of the unsavory, you know, personal episodes that have played out very publicly over the course of Evander Kane's career, and the fact that every stop of the way, he's sort of left with, you know, burned bridges behind him.
Yeah.
Right.
And you know what? To be honest, that's how it's probably going to end in Edmonton, too. Is I think that some people needed to address this situation and say, we understand we're taking a risk, but based on what happened in Winnipeg and Buffalo and San Jose, we should go into this eyes wide open and fully public with the notion that it probably doesn't end great, because it never ends well.
Yeah.
Because good behavior, if it's not inherent, and again, I don't think it would be change. If you're on good behavior, eventually you'll be off it. Because eventually you will revert to whatever it is that you do or whatever it is that you've done traditionally.
Well, and look, I think in building a core and building a team and building an organization, as much as I'm a stats guy, I don't think you can replace character. Like, I do think you need guys of absolute high caliber character to ultimately win in a sustainable way in this league. And yet, you know, I look at what the Carolina Hurricanes did to replace Dougie Hamilton, bringing in Anthony DeAngelo, and how effective he's been for them. And, you know, at the end of the day, as we've seen with the New England Patriots, like as we've seen with certain organizations, if you have a solid enough leadership group, if the deal is short term, if the guy is motivated, I mean, they can help you win in the short term. And that sort of poses bigger questions about the trade-offs. What is winning worth versus what are your own
standards? I'm glad you brought that up, because that's the great debate in all of this, is like, as a fan or a paying customer or someone that pays with time and effort and energy and support, you do have a decision to be made of, what is the price of winning? How much do I want to win? Am I willing to align myself with someone that maybe is diametrically opposed to what I believe in terms of morals and moral compass and what is good behavior and what is bad behavior? And if you choose that you don't want to go down that road, more power to you. More power to you. That is a very important stance to be taken, because at a certain point, winning becomes a bit unsavory when you bring in enough characters that go against every principle that you have, right? Now, the Oilers in Evander Kane haven't done that. This is one instance of it. But there's a lot of pieces out there right now. Scott Burnside had one up at Daily Faceoff saying, like, in moments of crisis, is this where you want to go? That you want to take that risk, that other teams that don't have this real immense gorilla on the back pressure to win are going to go out and sign Evander Kane? Because some teams just walked away from it. They're like, he would make us a better team on the ice, no question. But we're not willing to go down that road.
But also about 10 teams were in.
Sure. And that's the great debate that you have with what organizations are willing to do that. This all goes back to culture as well, I think. Because remember, the other thing with Kane,
I'm just not going to crush the Oilers for something that – I'm not going to crush the Oilers specifically for something a third of the league entertained.
Well, I'll push back on that, because I don't think a third of the league should have entertained it.
Well, no, but that's what I'm saying. You crush the league, or you crush the incentives as opposed to the Oilers, in my view.
One of the issues, and we don't talk about this enough, is that Evander Kane addressed all his off-ice indiscretions as smoke, and then he added that smoke eventually clears. It was all smoke, no fire. And I'm going to say this. Even if you remove the off-ice stuff, so the gambling allegations, the alleged abuse from his ex-wife.
Yeah, the multiple legal issues.
There's still the issue of not really a good teammate. I mean, in San Jose, after the litany of complaints that they had from within the room in Winnipeg and Buffalo, in San Jose, once Pavelski and Thornton and Marlowe left, it was Evander Kane showed up late for practice, sometimes didn't show at all, wasn't really respecting any of the team rules, and that is something that tangibly affects the on-ice product, because the San Jose Sharks, that room clearly didn't want him back. Right? When they had the opportunity to cut them loose, they took it. So, I understand that you can explain it away as well. You know, he's dealing with his off-ice issues and he's going to therapy and he's addressing these things. There are hockey-related questions about the guy that I'm not sure have ever been answered. And that's another huge risk as well when it comes to the room and the balance and everything.
Yeah, let's hope he sorts it all out, right? I mean, at the end of the day, that's sort of all you can hope for.
Lots more to get to on the program, 8 o'clock hour. Ian McIntyre, Sportsnet's very own, is going to join us here on the Home of the Canucks. We are also going to do a bunch of Ask Us Anythings in that final half hour. The Dunbar Lumber text line is 650-650. Ask Us Anything. You can literally ask us anything. It's Halford, it's Drance, filling in for Bruff, Sportsnet 650.